Judges chapter 7 this morning. So you can open up your Bibles there to Judges chapter 7, and let's continue the story of Gideon. We won't get all of his story here, but we will get one of the more famous parts, the more well-known parts of his story. Judges chapter 7, and I do have some main divisions and subtitles and things, and of course we will be racing against the clock. But we'll get through it, and we'll see what God has for us here. Judges chapter 7, and I will give you all of those main divisions and things as we go. Normally, I might announce those at the very beginning, but I'll just give them to you as we go. And there are three main divisions here, the first of which is the shutting down of pride, beginning at verse 1, and that will take us down to verse 8. And let's see what happens in the life of Gideon, or as he's called here in verse 1, Jerubbaal. And if you were here on Sunday, you know that his dad gave him that name, and it means to let Baal plead. Let Baal plead for himself. Let him fight his own fight. So it says, then Jerubbaal and all the people who were with him rose early and encamped beside the well of Harod, so that the camp of the Midianites was on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. So this continues the story from chapter 6, obviously, where Gideon had received his confirmation from the Lord. He had laid out a fleece and asked for God to show him some signs, and God certainly did that graciously. So here, God is preparing him for battle, preparing him for warfare, and is going to prepare even the army, as we will see here in just a moment. And he does that in two ways. But here, shutting down pride, he begins by evaluating the situation. Valuable lessons here throughout. Look at verse 2. And the Lord said to Gideon, at this point here, he speaks to him and says, the people who are with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel claim glory for itself against me, saying, my own hand has saved me. It's interesting that God starts out by saying to Gideon, you've got too many people. There are too many people for me, God says. Too many people. Now, in Gideon's mind, he's probably thinking, we've got thousands here, but it's not enough. But in God's mind, in the heart of God, you've got too many. There are too many for me to get glory here. So it's always best to allow God to evaluate the situation. I am never going to have the perspective of the situation or the place, the scenario that I find myself in. I'm not ever going to have the proper vision and insight or foresight. God is always going to have a better view of things. And it is always best that I submit my plans to him, to his critique, and to allow him to evaluate the situation, evaluate my plan, and change it as he sees fit. And that's what God does here for Gideon. Now, the next thing that he does in shutting down this pride is he starts with evaluating the situation. But the second thing he does is, probably to the horror of Gideon, I would imagine, and even to the other soldiers, he's excusing the soldiers. Beginning at verse 3, now therefore, because of that, because you've got too many people, proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, whoever is fearful and afraid, let him turn and depart at once from Mount Gilead. And 22,000 of the people returned, and 10,000 remained. So we find out there that he started out with 32,000 people, 32,000 soldiers. I imagine he was probably feeling pretty good about that. But still, he may have been fearful going against these other militaries that had gathered against him. This is, you know, I think not only about Gideon, and he sees 22,000 guys walk away, but what about the 10,000 that remained? I imagine they must have been thinking, wait a minute, what are we doing here? And should I stick around or should I go also? Because that's a lot of guys that just left. But this is God stripping away what Gideon had obviously gathered and set up. And we'll talk some more about that here. But let's move on, verse 4, because God's not done yet. But the Lord said to Gideon, the people are still too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. then it will be that of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, the same shall go with you. And of whomever I say to you, this one shall not go with you, the same shall not go. So God was evaluating for him earlier, and now he's excusing the soldiers. He's choosing. This is always the best. This is always the wisest for us, again, to submit our plans to him and allow him to strip away whatever it is that he wants to strip away. Verse 5 says, so he brought the people down to the water. And the Lord said to Gideon, everyone who laps from the water with his tongue as a dog laps, he shall set apart by himself. Likewise, everyone who gets down on his knees to drink. And the number of those who lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, was 300 men. But all the rest of the people got down on their knees to drink water. Then the Lord said to Gideon, by the 300 men who lapped, I will save you and deliver the Midianites into your hand. Let all the other people go, every man to his place. So the people took provisions and their trumpets in their hands, and he sent away all the rest of Israel, every man to his tent, and retained those 300 men. Now the camp of Midian was below him in the valley, and we'll move on in just a moment to our second main division. But Paul said to Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 4, no one engaged in warfare entangles himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier. Light and tight. That's the phrase that I use when I'm taking high school students to Mexico or to Nicaragua. As you're packing, especially for the young ladies, you can take one bag, one backpack. I'm not taking multiple bags. It's, you know, it's not a fashion week. We're going down to work. And light and tight, light and tight. And that's what good soldiers, those of you that have been in the military, I have not. I was not in the military, one of my many regrets, but I know this, you've got to be light and tight. You've got to travel light and tight. And we're getting ready to go to Washington, D.C. together, right? And my wife and I are very, very excited about that, light and tight. We're going to be traveling. Can't take too much. Here we see God stripping away, excusing the soldiers. Now, we know why he's doing it. He's doing it because there are too many people. God wants to get glory, and he's already told us, we've already found out, that if he allows that many people to go, then the people will become prideful, and they will think that they were the ones that got the victory, when in fact it was God. So God needed to strip those people away. Now, we've all had those mornings where you get up and things are just not working out well from the very beginning, from the get-go. Things begin to go wrong, and you know, I thought that the coffee maker was set up with the timer, and it's not, and now it's too late to make my coffee, and I've got to go. And you get out to the car, and something else goes wrong, and maybe you get to wherever you're going, and something has gone wrong, or you hit traffic. You know, we're in Southern California, and you hit traffic on the freeway or the roadways or whatever, and there are those days where it feels like everything's going wrong, and things are just not working out the way that I want them to. Well, perhaps it is because God is stripping away the things that I am trusting in. We want to learn to become uncomfortable with the comfortable and comfortable with the uncomfortable. We are soldiers enlisted in the army of God, aren't we? We forget that oftentimes. And oftentimes we can get in the mindset, I say we, I'm guilty of it, of thinking that I'm on vacation here on earth and that God should bless me with comfort and ease. And it's not the right mindset. It's not the condition that I want my heart to be in. I want to have the mindset of being a soldier in God's army, and that I'm marching into battle, and I need to be prepared at any time. And I need to allow God on those days to strip those things away and to not grow comfortable with the things that I have set up around me. You know, when God was speaking to Moses in Genesis chapter 12, Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, You know, what did he tell him? He told him to leave three things. He says, I want you to leave your country and your community and your father's house. I want you to leave what's familiar. I want you to leave your family, and I want you to leave your father's house. What was he doing? He was doing the same thing that he's doing with Gideon and the military right now. He's stripping away their safety net, and that terrifies us. Why would God take away our safety net? Because in the process of what he's doing, he wants you and I to understand that we do not need a safety net, because he then becomes our safety net. He's our safety. So that whether I find myself in Menifee or in Mexico or in Nicaragua or in D.C. or wherever I might find myself, whether it's in my room or if I'm in the midst of a battle, that if God is with me, I do not need a safety net, because he is our safety. And he doesn't just provide that safety, he is our safety. And here, he's stripping away what Gideon, no doubt, and the other soldiers were trusting in, their safety net, numbers. Lots of people. And he's stripping those things away. And, you know, make no mistake, and I know that many of you have already discovered this, he will do the same thing for us. And on those days when we wake up and the coffee's not ready and things are going wrong with the car and things are happening on the roadway or family or whatever it is that's going on, we need to make sure that we have the mindset of a soldier, understanding that, hey, this is God. God is working here. My life is his. He has the freedom to evaluate and to excuse whatever it is that he wants from my life. I need to move light and tight. And maybe these things become a distraction, and I need to have my focus on him and trusting him. And so he's excusing these soldiers, and it's just, it's comical, because, hey, we've got 32,000 of us, and in just a few minutes, I don't know how long this took, but in a very short time, God strips them all away, and now they're down to just 300. And we all know that God didn't even need the 300, but he chooses the 300. Now, this takes us, beginning in verse 9, to our second main division, if you're taking notes, stopping fear. So he was shutting down pride, and now beginning at verse 9, he is stopping fear, and that will take us down to verse 15. But let's look at verse 9. It happened on the same night that the Lord said to him, "Arise, go down against the camp, for I have delivered it into your hand." So in order to stop the fear, he does two things. He gives Gideon a command with a promise. We see that here in verse 9. Hopefully you saw that. Arise, go down. So he's not requesting something. He's telling Gideon, you know, you're in my army. You do what I say. You need to get up and you need to go down against the camp, the enemy camp. And then here's the promise. For I have delivered it into your hand. In the heart of God, it's past tense. It's already been declared. It's already been decided. It's as good as done here. I have delivered it into your hand. It's already yours. I'm putting it into your hand. And God giving a little clue there, and we'll see it as we get down further into the chapter, that God was planning on fighting. God was planning on getting the victory. He says, I have delivered it into your hand. It's yours. But he gives him this command with a promise, and the promises of God are so very sweet, aren't they? To be able to stand upon those promises, to know that, to be able to trust his word and the promises that are there, to know that he's faithful. Those things strengthen us as we continue on in life. And so we may be faced with some grave news, some diagnosis, some news of a sickness or a disease or some harm that's come to a family member. But standing in our hearts may be broken and maybe even worried and fearful in those moments. But then we remember God's word, his promises, and it strengthens us, knowing that he who began a good work will be faithful to complete it. Knowing that we get to experience the victory ultimately, right? We may live a life of hardship here. We may experience hardships. But we know that we are soon going to be going home with him. And what a blessing that is. What a blessing that is. The second thing that he does to stop the fear, he begins with this command with a promise. The second thing that he does is he gives him confirmation. He says in verse 10, "But if you are afraid to go down to the camp with Purah, your servant, and you shall hear what they say." And afterward, your hands shall be strengthened to go down against the camp. Then he went down with Parah, his servant, to the outpost of the armed men who were in the camp. So just in case you're a little bit confused, he's going down to the enemy camp here. So in verse 12, now the Midianites and Amalekites, all the people of the east, were lying in the valley as numerous as locusts. And their camels were without number, as the sand by the seashore in multitude. And when Gideon had come, there was a man telling a dream to his companion. Now, keep in mind that it was God who told him, if you're afraid, you need to go down. And in verse 11, you will hear what they say. So it sounds like God is orchestrating something here. He's sending him down to the enemy camp. And he says, I want you to go listen to what they're saying. How strange. What a strange thing that is. But he goes down. And what he finds here is in verse 13, and when Gideon had come, there was a man telling a dream to his companion. He said, I have had a dream. To my surprise, a loaf of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian. It came to a tent and struck it so that it fell and overturned and the tent collapsed. Now, I'm holding back my laugh all through this chapter because so many times the things that God does are just hilarious. And God tells him, he had just told him, if you're afraid, go down to the camp and you're going to hear something there and it's going to strengthen you. And he gets down there and he hears a story about a loaf of bread. And that's supposed to strengthen it, but in fact that's what it does, and we'll see that here. But I also think, and I'm just sharing my strange mind for a moment, the things that I think of as I'm reading through this, and I'm thinking, it's just a dream, I get it, but you know, this loaf of barley bread that tumbles down and it knocks down a tent. And I'm thinking that was either a really big loaf of barley bread or someone needs to work on their baking because it was way too hard. We don't know anything about the barley bread or the loaf of barley bread and what that looked like. But we understand that this loaf of barley, I mean, it's a loaf of barley bread. A loaf of barley bread cannot knock down a tent and strike it so that it falls and overturns and the tent collapses. That's silly. That could never happen. And certainly, Gideon and 300 people could not come down and gain victory over the thousands of Midianites and Amalekites. That could never happen. But also here, to think about this. God is seeking to encourage Gideon. He wants to stop the fear that Gideon is experiencing. And so what God does is, he actually sends a dream to one of these idolaters, a Midianite or an Amalekite. They're, you know, we're not told exactly who they are. There was just a man telling a dream. We don't know what it was, but they were all idolaters. And yet we see that God, once again, and we see it lots of times throughout the scriptures, that God can use anybody that he wants to. And he can send a dream to one of these idolaters and use this idolatrous individual, that one of the enemies of God and the enemies of Gideon, and can give him a dream that's going to encourage his own child, Gideon. The way that God works is astounding at times, and it's comical at times, not because God is God's not a joke or anything. That's not what I mean. But you understand, you know, just the way that God works sometimes, and the situations and the scenarios that work out, and we might go into a situation thinking, well, this is going to work out this way. But as God evaluates it, and He's in command, and He's the one making the decisions, things can work out in ways that we never imagined. And afterwards, we find ourselves dumbfounded and worshiping. And in fact, look at this in verse 14. Then his companion answered and said, This is nothing else but the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. Into his hand God has delivered Midian and the whole camp. He also gives one of these idolatrous enemies of God the gift of interpretation so that he can interpret the dream, so that Gideon at just that precise moment can hear him. And then look at the outcome in verse 15. And so it was when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation that he worshiped. That's the outcome that we want. And that is the outcome that you and I should be familiar with. Especially on those days when we wake up and the coffee's not ready and things are going wrong and things are happening. And it seems like everything is going wrong. And we stop and we say, you know what, maybe God is stripping these things away, preparing me for something, taking away that safety net. God is my safety. I need to march on, march forward. And those days and those times should end with worship. They should bring us to a place of worship. When we stop and we realize and see and witness and say, you know, look what God did. I never could have imagined that this day would have ended the way that it did, you know, after the way that it started. But we see God and we want to be brought to that place of worship also. And it says in verse 15 and the second half that he returned to the camp of Israel and said, "Arise, for the Lord has delivered the camp of Midian into your hand." Look at that. Now he comes back with confidence once again. He's trusting God. The Lord has delivered the camp of Midian. Now, the third and final main division is the spiritual warfare here that we will see beginning at verse 16. And beginning at verse 16, we see them going forward by faith. Then he, that's Gideon, divided the 300 men into three companies. And he put a trumpet into every man's hand. With empty pitchers and torches inside the pitchers. I mean, are they going to Mardi Gras? What are they doing? Why do they have trumpets? And he said to them, "Look at me and do likewise. Watch. And when I come to the edge of the camp, you shall do as I do. When I blow the trumpet, I and all who are with me, then you also blow the trumpets on every side of the whole camp and say, 'The sword of the Lord and of Gideon.'" I've got a problem. And that's in verse 16, that he put a trumpet into every man's hand, empty pitchers and torches inside the pitchers. But there's no talk of swords or spears or shields or any sort of weapon. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul wrote this to the Corinthians in verses 3 down to verse 5. "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ." And in verse 6, "being ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled." We understand, we've all heard that before multiple times. We know that our weapons are weapons of warfare are not weapons according to the flesh. But it struck me as I was reading through this passage in Corinthians, "for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal." He says, the ones that we have are for casting down arguments and every high thing. Pulling down strongholds, he said in verse 4. And every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. And, you know, I've always thought of this verse, these verses, as my weapons of warfare are these spiritual weapons that I have. They're not meant for carnal, for physical warfare. But I always imagined that they're aimed at the enemy and, you know, whoever that might be. And I believe that that is true, and Satan and all the thoughts and the things that he can bring. But also I saw myself in here in verse 4 and 5. They're not carnal, but they're mighty in God for pulling down strongholds. What strongholds? Strongholds that, yes, the enemy might set up, but strongholds that at times even I set up between myself and God. Because I want to set up my own safety net. I'm prone to that. And in verse 5, casting down arguments. What arguments? The arguments maybe that I have with God. God, I don't think that you should send away the 22,000. I think you should keep them. I might need them. I don't think that you should do this. I don't think that you should do that. Yeah, I know what it says in your word, but I've got a pretty good plan here, God. And every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and I find myself there so often, arguing with God, exalting myself against the knowledge of God, only to discover time and time and time and time again how foolish I am. And then that reminds me of how faithful He is, how merciful He is, how gracious He is, and how patient He is to train His child, me, once again, with discipline and then to give direction so graciously. I need those weapons of warfare that are not according to the flesh. And yes, meant to be aimed at the enemy, sure, but oftentimes I can find myself acting like the enemy. So Gideon, in verse 19, and the 100 men who were with him, came to the outpost of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, just as they had posted the watch, and they blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers that were in their hands. Then the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers. They held the torches in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands. Notice, both of their hands are occupied, no place for a sword. And they cried, "The sword of the Lord and of Gideon." And every man stood in his place all around the camp, and the whole army ran and cried out and fled. No place for weapons of warfare, carnal weapons of warfare. It's because God is doing the fighting here. They will get a chance here in just a moment, as we'll see. But in the spiritual warfare, we see them going forward by faith. I cannot imagine. Again, I was not in the military. I've never been on a battlefield, obviously. I cannot imagine what it must be like to be heading into battle, and that's with weapons that you have. And to the thought of going into battle and not having any weapons, but only a torch and the trumpet and the container that they had to break. I mean, it must have seemed so very foolish to them. And oftentimes God may call us to that place where we think, well, this is just it's never going to work. This is foolish. This is how is this supposed to happen? But God has a plan. And my only task is to remain faithful to Him, to follow Him. And in verse 22, when the 300 blew the trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword against his companion throughout the whole camp, and the army fled to Beth Acacia towards Zerorah, as far as the border of Abel Meholah by Tabath. And the men of Israel gathered together from Naphtali, Asher, and all Manasseh and pursued the Midianites. Then Gideon sent messengers throughout all the mountains of Ephraim, saying, "Come down against the Midianites and seize from them the watering places as far as Beth Barah on the Jordan." Then all the men of Ephraim gathered together and seized the watering places as far as Beth Barah on the Jordan. And the book of Judges, if you haven't studied it yet, is rated R for violence. And here it is in verse 25. They captured two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeb. They killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb, and Zeb they killed at the winepress of Zeb. They pursued Midian and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon on the other side of the Jordan. Oh, goody, thanks. Let's finish with this. Verse 3 says, "Now therefore proclaim." So what did Gideon do? He proclaimed. In verse 4, even after God had stripped away the thousands, God told him in verse 4, "The people are still too many, bring them down." So what did Gideon do in verse 5? He trusted God and brought the people down to the water. In verse 9, God told him, "Arise, go down against the camp, and if you're afraid, go down with Parah." And he was afraid, but what did he do? He went down with Parah. And when God told him, "Take this torch and this container and this horn and go into battle," what did Gideon do? He did it. Therein is the lesson. God will fight for us. Our job, and I say our job simply, I understand that it's not simple, but it really is our one job. You've heard the phrase, you had one job. That one job for us, being soldiers for the Lord and of the Lord and in His army, is obedience to Him. Regardless of whether we approve of the plan or not, or whether we think it wise or smart, or that's not for us to decide. Our only part in it is to remain faithful to Him and to do whatever it is that He's telling us to do, trusting Him along the way. That's difficult, isn't it? It's a lifelong process. We struggle through that. We struggle through that. And the Lord is just so very gracious to continue working in us, changing us, teaching us little by little by little, and picking us up once again and dusting us off and leading us on. He's so very faithful. And what a joy it is, and sometimes it is terrifying to be part of His army, but what a joy it is. And hopefully that will bring us to the same place that it brought Gideon to, that place of worship.